So, and ribbon category, which I will also define, but we kind of already defined. Wait, no. This is the ribbon category, which we haven't defined before. We'll define. This is not the casual ribbon. This is something different. I hate the word frame tangles or anything. Okay. So this is the first goal of this session. The second one will be focusing on some features of this ribbon category, like quantum dimension and quantum trace, come out from structures in here. But that's like more. We don't need to talk about that in order to establish this. So first, I'll define an algebra.
Ribbon category is not necessarily a braided category.
It's necessarily a braided category.
It's necessarily a braided category. Mm-hmm. What about tangle category? Does it?
So braid category and tangle category. So remember, a braid category and tangle category lives here on this side. Braid category and tangle category live on this side. So the ribbon category lives here, but that's just a naming issue. I mean, it's just misnamed kind of. So so we have braided algebra here, right? So we have braided algebra here. So in properly, it probably should be ribbon algebra, right? And here should be ribbon category, like how we have braided category. So it's like a braided category, but it's not a braid category, not as well.
And there should be a tangled category?
What we introduced wasn't quite tangled category because of this missing thing, because this column in there doesn't get that. So it's okay not to name it tangled. But if you are careful, you can probably make up a tangled category, but not what we have to be talking about. So yeah, there will be, you know, you should be able to define a tangled category, but we haven't. I don't think this is the same as what we have. So the things we need to say about ribbon algebra is, a few more pieces of data. So last time we had this top algebra, this n-type we introduced. And now we just have data. So last time we deal with these things, right, pretty much? The braided of left duality, so we dealt with these things. But now we introduce the data. Well, if you like, you can call it the universal twist. But I mean, actually the inverse. Let's keep it here for now. This quantum data. This is some braided Hopf algebra. I wasn't very careful to write it out, but you know which part I mean. So this part is a braided algebra, and last time I may have said this ambiguity. Sometimes I assume S to be invertible, but here S is not necessarily invertible. I'm not sure if I should say this now. So last time we said that S gives you a left duality on the category here, this middle category, right? And S inverse gives you a right duality. But here, we don't need S to be invertible. We don't need S inverse because using the twist, we can construct a right duality without using S inverse. That's kind of nice. And even nicer, the left dual will be the same as right dual, as we see later. So that's what we
can I ask a question to for it? So suppose we S was invertible in this case. Would the twist be somehow trivial?
So I don't know if they coincide, and maybe it's a good question. If you go back through some examples, you might find that they coincide. So let me see. If S is invertible, so the question is whether the right dual defined using theta. Like, using theta is the same as the right dual defined using S inverse, right? So something to be checked. I'm not sure at the moment. Maybe it's that I'm discussing some example, but for now, we'll just think about two different ways of defining it, and we'll see, like, if you're interested. So the element theta satisfies these things. So it's an H, it's an element of H, and theta is central, so just means that it commutes with every element of H. Central element of the algebra, looking at H as an algebra. And also satisfy a bunch of relations. Just like the Brady conditions, it might not seem very natural a priori, but it's kind of what is needed to have this range. I'll just write out the documentation for this. I could try to, but there's plenty, I don't really get to like justify anymore. Now I define the ribbon category. So you just keep in mind these things, if you check carefully. So one of the theorems is that will give you a ribbon category, and these are quite tedious words. So I will say the theorem properly, but I will not prove them.
So the equation you wrote below theta is central. You have R12, and then you have it multiplied by R. So R12 is a tensor, right? Is that
R21 is flip of the R12.
Yeah, so the R next to it, it's multiplied with which one?
R is something in H tensor H. R21 is also something in H tensor H. So you multiply together.
Oh, yeah. R is in H.
Yeah, the tensor product.
R is the same as
R12. Why would you make it the same? So
I thought that's
sometimes they're the same, but that's maybe not here. I didn't say it.
Because there's only two factors, right? So.
Yes, say two factors, but R is not kind of symmetric in the two components necessarily.
Yeah, so R12 is the same as
R12 is the same as R12. Sorry, I wasn't listening. Okay, yeah, R12 isn't, but you. Let's see. Okay, just
a
reminder.
So R12 is the same as R but flipped, is that it?
No, R21 is
flipped.
Then it's flipped.
Yes.
Okay.
So, yes. I could just write R21 times R12 is the same.
Okay.
R is just invertible element, I mean, it satisfies something, so we can pick inverse of the whole thing. But other than that, not much to say about it. So, now, this one, as before, we build on the structure of, you know, a category with left duality, right? Graded category with left duality, because that's what we get when we just have a graded half algebra. So this is a verb, this is that, this is grading. And now we again have a new thing that's also called theta. I mean, but this is a natural, a natural isomorphism in the between, like, you know, the identity function and the category, but which I will write down for. But that one is an element of H, so just distinguish them, but they're not that different. Actually, they are inverse of each other, somehow strange. So this naming, I mean, they suggest that they're just action. Actually, I will write down the theorem. This is a strict graded. Category with left duality. So this is separate definition for now. So just forget about the part for now, even though the motivation comes from each other, but don't assume anything more than what I say. So this is, and theta is, I would say, what's the condition on theta? Theta is a natural isomorphism of specified functors. So usually, you remember, natural isomorphism, transform functors, right, from one functor to another. And so this particular one, so it is indexed by thing in the source category, right? Usually, so when you have natural isomorphism, it's indexed by objects in the beginning category of the two functors. So, and the two functions should go between two of the same, there are two categories for the same two categories. Not these two are the same, okay. All right. So this is a, so this is isomorphism, that's why it's natural isomorphism in semantic transformation. And given any f, this every function takes f to f. So you just kind of this one, and if you like, you can put here, and this is theta v prime. Okay. So it's indexed by v inside object of C. Okay. Such that I'm not done yet. So that's just expanding to say what natural means. For all v w in object of C, we have these two conditions. Theta v tensor w equals theta v tensor theta w. And also this one. So the theta associated to the object v star will have a dual of v, right, as you see. So it's the same as theta v. This is the adjoint, the transpose, let's call it the transpose. The general definition of transpose, I'll just explain briefly if you want. So let me say, write down the graphical representation and the motivation for these
equations. So what is v star also?
V star, because C is category of left duality.
Oh, I see.
V star is that thing.
Okay.
And let me just put an aside here. In general, I guess if you have, what's a good way to define the dual of a transformation? The general definition, I'm trying to write down general definition. Maybe you're all comfortable with it for now, or do you want me to write something? It's not that I right away will think of the best definition. So I need some sort of pairing first between V star and V, right? I guess most of the time, so I guess it's not, it doesn't even rely so much on the module structure as on the vector space dual vector space structure. But I don't know, so when it comes from there, V star usually as a vector space, just a vector space dual of V. And then we can kind of use this evaluation pairing. But in general, I don't know what pairing to pick, but basically, if you have because I haven't thought through this, but if you have a good pairing, then kind of maybe the star is the one that you, how do I say this? F on V. How do I say this properly? Okay, anyway, let's keep this one. Just okay. Okay, but the usually it's just your transpose for the, if you were talking about with respect to the evaluation for real vectors and stuff. Okay, well, okay, maybe we can come back to this one, but maybe you're this is a different color. So I want to write down the graphical representation, kind of introducing the notation to this graphical representation of the things. But and I will give you a motivation too. I wonder if the motivation should come first. Do you want to look then? Okay. Should I motivate them first, or should I draw the use the random representation?
Well, is the graphical representation going to help us understand the motivation, or
vice versa? Not as much. Not as much. I think I have a separate graph.
Okay.
I will do the graph first, but it's not too enlightening. So you see, this is just representing this. So everyone would put a box that represents the hard distance. That's not quite, maybe not, maybe the identity was taken identity, but you could if at the end you can beat this one, it'll be here without the box. And so this one is just, so if you read from left to right, then you draw from top to bottom. Theta V tensor theta W. Then you break them twice. Okay. So the part that is grading still corresponds on to grading like before. And these you stick in boxes for. And for this one, you have theta V stuck. And this is, these are V stars. You can say a dual, or you can reverse the arrow or label by V. Right. And transpose in graphical representation is given by this thing. So in general, if you have a function f, the transpose of f is given by kind of this thing. Because it will go between these dual to, you know, V dual. V dual, W dual, so this is just what it says in the language. But let me say what the twist is. So the twist, remember, it's supposed to relate to the frame tangles. So let's think in terms of ribbons, like, you know, topological ribbons. In terms of ribbons, what we have is kind of, this twist is correspond to this thing, right? It's the full twist, 2 by 2 pi.
Here you only have one dual. How come you've got two switchings?
You mean here?
Yeah. You've got one. You've got two arcs, but you only have one dual. I don't understand.
So let's see. So this is a morphism from V star to V star, right?
Yeah.
So if you look at this, this is a morphism from, so this is going upward, remember the arrow?
Yeah.
So this is a, from also V star, because it's going upward arrow to an upward, so you get V star to V star. And then, and it's kind of somehow, so this is the dual.
So first you're applying the dual to get into V star from V. And then you're applying the theta V, and then you're applying the dual again because you have the theta V, the whole thing start.
Yeah.
Okay.
So because sometimes it's always safer to actually truncate it, size it this way, and then you can't quite interpret like that. So I haven't explored all the possibility of how, what liberty you can take interpreting like that, but I skip that. But probably because that may be when we talk about. So when we define this, so maybe there's some science in defining this. Is this, so why is a good representation? And we did not talk too much about it. But this is, the representation is supposed to carry over. So, or just because this is input, this is output, this is just a symbol for, this is just a symbol for the dual. That's it. Yes, just take it as symbol. And it's a transpose of the map here. So you have a transpose back. So, here you have this thing. Okay, so I'm saying that theta V is kind of this thing. If this is your V, this ribbon is your V, then theta V is that thing. This is a potential recipe for confusion, right? Because the real ribbons are things on the right-hand side, the topological categories, and these morphisms are things in the middle. So one thing we will, you know, I try to give you this impression is that all the relations in the topological categories kind of hold in this ribbon category by design. So, so if it were true in the ribbon category, we want it to hold in here. So let's say that for ribbons, we want to have such notion where they must be satisfied with the appropriate definition of theta, you know, of two strands. Like, you know, if I have two ribbons, we need to. What does theta mean, right? So we'll draw it, and it's a, you know, very reasonable thing. So on this one, we can say, like, we have two ribbons, and we'll twist them together. This is drawing sometimes, but I want to just copy out my drawing so that it'll get stuck in the middle. So basically, you twist two ribbons together. Just imagine like put them in like one bigger piece of paper and then twist them all together. Just fold them, right? Like kind of fusing them first and twisting, something like that. Kind of. Okay, I can try just drawing, but I probably will miss some turns. Yeah.
This is like some ribbon version of the usual rhythm instrument space.
Actually no.
Not literally.
Not literally. It's like how the Young Baxter relates. So the randomizer kind of corresponds to one of the Young Baxter thing. Like this is randomizer one, so randomizer three. But then what happens here is like this other thing which has the tensor product, you know, two strands going over one instead of, you know, or the other way. So there's two equations instead of one, but there's something to define. Maybe I'm too big. So let me just draw this. Okay, so. Okay, it's just twisting two ribbons together. And it's the same as twisting each of them and then doing the braiding. Okay. And then just keeping them facing to the front, like forcing some sort of, only look at one face of it, I mean. So kind of that's what the relation says here. At the level of, you know, in the topological categories, these are true, because these are true. And you kind of define your, you know, in the topological category, I'm going to claim that it's a ribbon category in this general sense, like categorifying this topological thing. And I'm just, you know, you can kind of, you still, even though you know how to, what the, on one strand, the twisting is, but you can kind of define on the tensor product, just say, impose them to twist them together. And that's going to be a definition or something, then this will be true. You see this holds naturally. And so it's kind of, this one corresponds to kind of twisting this way and looking at the reverse and trying to see flow back, and you can say that's the same as being a twist this way. So this also has a natural topological motivation. I mean, it's true in the topological category. So it kind of has to be true for ribbon category to be any sort of representation of the category ribbons, it will have to satisfy this. Okay, so what are we doing today? The next thing, let's just write down. First, let me write a property of this. So, an important property of ribbon category. It's this one. So I was talking about how do you get a right duality. For it to kind of, the goal will be to be able to represent any ribbon by these things. You know, kind of have a tensor functor from the ribbon to these things. The ribbons, you know, they can turn this way and can turn that way, right? So this duality, only having the left one, like only having these ones and these ones, are not enough. We would want something that corresponds to this one, not enough. We want something that corresponds to this. So we want the notion of regularity. So what do we get? Somehow using the twist, we get a regularity out of it. So the definition is as follows. So for all of E in object C, you can define the right duality to be. So I guess it goes this way. So the thing comes down and goes back out. So we see that originally this is this part is the left wall, and then you use the braiding and then do this. And in the end, you kind of have basically flip these two things. If this was from K to me. Tensor V star, this will be V star tensor V fit, so which is the definition of the regularity. And also you have this depth thing. Now it's defined as you come up here and down here. So it's just using somehow the braiding, you can switch switch kind of the positions of the two points. Of course you need all these things. And you can check that this does give you a regularity, which I'm not going to check. And it's even nicer than that. It makes C autonomous, which means it has both left and right duality. But even nicer than that, it has this property. So the left dual is the same as the right dual. So as module, if you're talking about, if this category comes from the category of written algebras, then it will actually mean like the module structure on them are the same. Not only are they the same vector space, they have the same module structure. Not the same module structure. And this is also crucial when you try to stack together diagrams, right? So if you have these trivial links, say, okay, and you want to look at, by this I already mean some kind of representation in a category, written category. So by drawing this, I don't mean the topological link anymore, I just say, okay. So usually what happens is that when you cut it up, so this one is from the K here to V tensor V dual. So this is the left duality. And usually when you just have a right duality, you will need here V a left dual V, right, usually, and then K here. Okay, so usually right duality only gives you V and this is a different dual. But now the fact that they're the same, make sure that this diagram actually makes sense in the ribbon category. So like there are way more properties to go prove, but I'm not talking about anything that you don't need. So okay. So let's now talk about the category rings. Well, maybe I can use this much. But basically we already talked about it. But I remember last time I said, okay, the Rittmeister one doesn't hold, but I did not tell you what holds. Let me just give you the corresponding relations that should replace Rittmeister. So Ribbon's like basically the category balance, like last time we were doing. So instead of Rittmeister one, remember, like everything else is the same generating morphisms. The other ones that all the relations correspond to isotropy and Rittmeister 2 and 3 are the same. The only thing, like we said, this is no longer true. But what's true is that basically these two things are inverse of each other, I guess. So somehow this part gives you a 2 pi trace, maybe this gives you a minus 2 pi trace, and this gives you a 2 pi trace, and so on. So the choices cancel. That's the idea. So this is a real topological. Neo, this is topological. So you can use your intuition without any justification. So this is not true. So what we have is this. Then you see this would imply that it's like this. And the definition of the ribbon, mechanical ribbons, is that it corresponds exactly to the morphisms correspond exactly to the isotropy classes of ribbons. And as a strict tensor category in terms of generators and relation, you can write down the things before this replacement. This is just a convenient mean for us to say something, write down the invariant, right? Remember invariant, some work functors, but if you have generators, easier to work with. Easier to write down a functor just by depending on the generators. So the first theorem, the first step, so let's just move back to the algebra and then category one. So we have all three things that defined, and we're just going to establish some connections. So the fact that ribbon algebra kind of gives you a ribbon category, basically by looking at its modules, I will say this theorem. Without proof, but with a crucial information, you can check this. So, theorem, let H be a graded of algebra. And H theta. H theta is a ribbon algebra. Even only if H mod HF. So this time you're interested in the finite dimensional assumption. Only look at the finite dimensional modules. So it's kind of because last time we showed that. Just one direction first. Okay. So if you have ribbon algebra, then this one will. We already showed that show that this is a graded category with left duality last time. By this construction via the S. But the further claims is a ribbon category. So what's new about the ribbon category is say there's this data that behaves this way. Right. So the only thing I need to say to establish this part is is that this one is the theta is defined as of any object in the category, in this category. Theta V is defined as the action of the theta inverse. This theta inverse is in H, but this is the action. So maybe you you want to have the reverse, just like for monotonic graded by algebras and all this stuff. But this is only true if H is finite dimension. So it will be so clear why we need that once I write down what gives you the theta. So the theta, if it were finite dimensional, then theta, you can check this verifier ribbon algebra axioms by using this theta. So this is just this is a twist in the category acting on the one in D. Okay, and D is a finite dimensional, and D may not be H. Sorry, I'm not. You should be careful. Okay. So this is H, right? So if H is finite dimensional, then H is a finite dimensional H module. the algebraic and module structure out. And so it has a twist on it. So use that twist, acting on the identity element and taking the inverse will give you the appropriate element inside H.
So why did that need finite dimensional?
Because if H is not finite dimensional, then H is not in X mod F. This means finite dimensional. So it has to be a finite dimensional module. And
okay.
Yes. So that's why you need that. And you remember that for the gradient one, we didn't really need it. Like, I might have left some ambiguity in that one, like when you have read the biological that correspondence, you need H. But you see that where this at this place you already needed the finite dimensional assumption, this giving this left duality. Last time we used the dual basis and basis to do this. So if we don't have that, it's not clear how to do this. I mean, sorry, this kind of slightly separate question. Well, we can only turn this thing into a graded thing with left duality, because if the vector space is not bi-dimensional, we cannot find this pairing of bases, dual bases and bases. So if it, on the right-hand side, only this thing is true, then we, so in the construction, you'll figure out where we need bi-dimensional. Okay, so maybe, so now we left the proof of this as an exercise, since it's quite easy. Like, remember last time everyone was falling asleep on that video. So this time I will just let's do the topological part. So there are a few comments I'll make. It's also very similar to, I think it was the last time. It's kind of similar, but still. All these things are similar. Yeah, it's standing by the same thing, but it's still on the same one. So I mean, we've been calculating, right? Very nervous. Let me say, so we already defined what ribbons are. Like I talked about the classes, ribbons is just that category that we defined earlier, the R. But now, let's say what invariant is for ribbons. If it's all very reasonable extension, just a very reasonable definition. You know, if you were to implement this theory, maybe you can figure it out. So it's just a straight tensor functor. Preserving all these, all those things, all I mean the structures in the category. Oh, let's say from R to another ribbon category. Maybe one thing I did not. Well, I've mentioned that I did not write down is that R is a ribbon category, so you will have twist and this gradient and the left duality. And this will also have all these things. You want something that preserves that. You want a function preserving all these structures. And preserving means basically maps the things, those things here to those things there. The twist to the twist. So preserving the gradient. Here, last time when we defined invariant braids, remember we said it's a strict braided tensor function from B to C, right? The B is the braid category. And I omit that word, but because the braiding here means that it will be a braided tensor function. So last time we only wanted to preserve gradient, so we kind of defined this object called graded tensor function, which means preserving gradient in the case when the function is strict. So this time we introduce two things, but we just don't give the name. We could call it maybe braided, I mean, or the ribbon tensor. This could be the definition, right? Straight ribbon tensor. Just like straight braided tensor. So it's a matter of naming. So you kind of burn the pool. Where do you do this definition? And I'll just put it in there, right? So what I want to do now is to construct an array. Using things in the in the general category in C. So given a ribbon category C, an object being C, we define this one thing. Kind of, this is a minimum thing we need to define. That is, where does an object go? So, as in terms of objects, we kind of generate an object. When we say generate category, we can talk in terms of morphisms. Those are morphisms of R. So now I want to come to from R to C, so I need to say what F, how F acts on the generators of R. But I did not talk about the objects. But basically, objects for R is, you know, this going this plus sign, which means kind of a peg that goes ready to take something downward. You remember in the topology category, an object is a series of plus minus signs. Okay. So this is defined to be V. And from there, you can basically extend everything you need. So let me see. So let me just check. So preserving a right now, we probably get it. Okay, let me just focus. So the claim is that we can extend. Last time I specified one more thing or something, but that's kind of not necessary from the kind of function we want to get. But the claim is we can extend. That wasn't even necessary. I just wrote them down without thinking. Okay, extend F uniquely to any invariant vertex, which means the function preserving this is about. This proof is not, it's kind of longish, also something that I will skip. But I'll tell you, as a consequence of this, what are all these important generating things get matched. Okay, so as a result, well, in particular, this is a theorem type of thing, this point. But in particular, what happens, so I think you have F mapping. If you take a minus sign, it gives you V star. That probably also follows from duality because it involves a star V. Right. So, but I mean, the morphisms, what it does is kind of interesting. So it takes, in the topological category, this braid, like this crossing, you take it to CVV just like before. And, you know, similarly, this inverse braiding, you just take it to the inverse of CVV. But the new things are these. So you have this cup pointing to the right. That one is correspond to your this bird of V. That I always use this to represent, but you know, it's actually the F of that. And this one will be the DV, right? That's always how I write represent DV. Actually, that's a new representation of this indicator. And this one will be V prime, so you can see those two kind of V star V instead of V star, like K V star. And there's two more. So F of base this one, this theta in the ribbon category. This one induces this 2π twist. This 2π twist is mapped to this twist in the C, in C. And also the inverse to the minus 2π twist goes to the inverse. And you see that just by defining this and requiring that f be a straight tensor function preserving all these things, you know where all the generators go, all the generators of R goes. So we can define it on all of R, define f on all of R. And well, not that so, but because the definition of C, the definition of ribbon categories in general, we satisfy those relations and we make sure that whenever the relations are true in R, and also true the image also. The image of the relation is also true. So maybe, but going back to Adrian's question before, you know, are these things 2π or whatever? So in the terms of category, they're kind of abstract morphisms, abstract morphism, just some morphisms. So your question is maybe.
I never asked the 2π.
So wait, for example, theta v, does it have to be a twist by 2π? At some point you ask whether can it be any...
Well, this is kind of abstract.
Yeah, that's right.
It's an isomorphism on vector spaces.
Right.
The vector space can be anything.
Yeah, not necessarily on vector spaces.
Well, you can
so
say
modules
it's
2π.
I don't think...
Is it rotation, the question, right? So let's take it slightly narrow down a tiny bit. Let's consider ribbon category based on ribbon algebras, by taking A modulus of ribbon algebras, and those will be vector spaces. The question, can you visualize them as some sort of 2π rotation of vector space?
Well, I think you can.
That would be identity.
It's not a kind of rotation with a rigid metric. Right. It's a topological rotation, but you can see the full rotation as 2π.
So my point is that it's not, so this is a linear, it will be a linear map. In, being a morphism in H mod, say, H mod F or something, it definitely needs to be a linear map. And being a linear map, you don't have this, it has to be rigid, right? And anything that twists that 2π would be,
But the thing is, it is just kind of a twist, a continuous or smooth or discrete, that's the...
You can think of as discrete here, I think you just say there's this morphism which corresponds to 2π twist.
I think it depends on the
topological category. No, my point was that we shouldn't think this is just a morphism. My point is that the twist happens in the topological category, not in here.
Yeah, but the thing is, there should be something which characterizes those isomorphisms. For example, if V is one-dimensional, then you cannot have, a twist less than pi, or between pi and 2π, because it's like a belt, or a ribbon. You can only twist by pi or 2π, those multiples of pi. You can have...
But it won't be 2π rotation in the vector space. If you any axis, if you rotate by 2π, it's the identity. In general, it won't be that. So all I'm saying that when you think about 2π, we're talking about a category inside the ribbon category, inside the topological category. There's nothing, it doesn't correspond to any topological twist necessarily in the category, in the general ribbon, C, in C. But it corresponds to twists in R. So that was my point, just when we draw such things, like theta, draw a line, or you might even represent it using this thing sometimes in C. You can represent, you could, right, represent it using this. Following the spirit of me writing, these symbols for me. But it actually looked in different space. That's my point. I might draw this, but it doesn't mean literally that. It just means image under some function of that thing. So the role of theta, so we were pointing out here, if we don't have this theta, then we cannot define this. We don't have this right development, and you can't even stack up diagrams. So this graphical representation doesn't quite coherently make sense if left and right dual are not the same. So remember when we say the left dual and right dual are kind of both indicated by a peg going upwards, like as thing. So you cannot distinguish them, right? In general, you cannot use graphic representation. You're given only a category of left and right dual without the B right star and the B left star being the same. So in this one, you can coherently represent everything using diagrams. And also, there's a notion of universality. So universality of the ribbon category or universality of the break category. What it really means, you know, you can kind of forget the word. What it really means, the important things is that they say, let's say this R is universal for ribbon categories, let's say. That means that any relation that's true in R will also be true in C under such any these kind of numbers. Or better, kind of, because when you write things in a ribbon category, you are tended to represent them by graphs, say, like this. And there are two things. One is, so because in this category, not only can you have these betas in boxes, you can also have an arbitrary f in boxes, right? Any morphism in the category. So the naturality of this operation can make sure that it commutes with f wherever appropriate. Commutes, or you can push the and these kind of boxes along. Okay, that's one thing. So the topological thing and the morphisms in the category commutes in some sense. Like, you know, just doesn't mean commutes, sometimes it switches stands, right? But, you know, just compatible. Yeah, you can shift them, and you can push them through the betas. That's another thing. Another thing is, as you know, if you only have these topological things like theta or this braiding and this bending, they basically behave like as if it's in the topological category. So you can straighten things out. So everything, there's a build-up to this, and don't take it for granted. But when you have braiding, you can kind of pull strands over each other using this graphical calculus, because we proved this theorem that, like, because we have this universality of the ribbon category. So
I didn't make myself clear by using two pipelines. What I want to say is that these theta, in some cases, I think they are characterized by some discrete group. For example, if V is one dimensional, it's characterized by Z2. You can only have, you know, half rotation, line rotation, something like that. Half twist or twist. Is that, you think it makes sense?
You mean like fermion boson type of thing, basically?
Well, you may think it in that way, but what I wanted to say is this theta is characterized by something. In many cases, they are not it's not a continuous linear map. It's kind of discrete.
Yeah, but discrete is fine, because we only define the theta V is corresponds to two pi j. I mean, in that category. But anyway, like, you can have a bunch of discrete things. Because we can only compose, you know, discrete number of these theta V's anyway, so that's fine. But we just need to be careful where things live. And I have, so can we cover quantum trace just quickly? So a couple of definitions. With left duality, with the right duality given as before, then for in ribbon categories. For any V in an object of C, and F is an endomorphism of V. So it's a morphism in a category between just going. Source is B and the target is B. We define the quantum trace of F as, you know, a light right typing it out like this, but I mean, just like also write the drawing. So we'll be, well, maybe you all see, it's like this, right? So on the top, you have a depth going the opposite left to the left. And this, your F cancel that, and then you have a verb going there this way, right? So, and kind of this thing, now I draw this, but it's in C and it's not in R, right? So this, all these things are meaning in C. So basically, the F of this thing helps. Okay, this is inside, and the morphism of I. So just kind of, the trace in general is not a number, but it's an endomorphism of the I, where I is the identity, the, what do you call it, unit identity of the category C. So I is a thing which I can, has a natural morphism, like kind of becoming this kind of thing, you know, this distinguished object, okay. And it's an endomorphism now, you think. So why it's usually a number is because, you know, if we're dealing with A modules, the I is usually K, just like field K. So an endomorphism K is just a number. So in the point of dimension, it's a special case of this, just the identity. Okay. So the trace is defined for a map. Of homomorphism, and the dimension is defined for an object. And take the F to be the identity on me. So, dimension, the symbols, this one, the trace of identity. Okay, that's great. And if this is just a symbol. A couple of properties that you should know about the trace is the properties. There are some hand, like very useful, like alternative definitions that you can prove using graphs. Using the graphical representation pretty easily. And assuming like what I told you, pushing F through and, you know, and treating the wire like topological stuff that you can do. So the properties of quantum trace. Well, maybe some of the properties. Or maybe in some sense they might justify why it makes sense to call them trace because it sounds like similar stuff as the vector space trace. So if F and G are in homomorphism, in C, then and C is a Rubin category. And I have the F here. So this is the definition of the trace, F of F, home trace of F. And it's the same actually going the putting the F on the right hand side. Okay. So you can, you know, as just as well define the trace to be this thing. It's just useful in computation sometimes. You can prove, there's a graphical proof, it will be in the notes, so maybe we don't have time to go through it now. But I want to go through one because it's kind of cool, maybe the next one. Because it just illustrates the method. So here you have trace of F composed with G, whenever they make sense. So maybe say F goes between B to B prime, and G goes from B prime to B. So you not only can compose this way, you can compose the other way too. So because this claim, they both need to make sense. So that's what the claim says. And let's just give a short proof of this. So you have F. Yeah, first you have, well, maybe this is, let me write it in the right way. Whatever, it doesn't matter. Okay, this is say maybe, G composed with F, but it will just restart from the right hand side. So now I stick in the definition for this left duality. This part, the top part, will be replaced by this thing, theta V, because this input space to V. Then I stack F and G after that. okay, right? Now I want to take G and move it around. Well, so in a sense, maybe I need to be more careful. I skipped some steps, but you can introduce some choice and some comp. You know, you need to be careful each step. You still justify each step. But I thought that. And I think that I maybe omitted something. You can put G on top. If you need that. And kind of have the. So it involves a stage some naturality grading. It involves some careful how you define the area of grading to switch to another. This is not completely obvious, but it kind of, you know, the orientation seems to be very screwed up, but things like that involves some data. Okay, but anyway, also notice this is V prime now. Because F maps V to V prime, just in general. What do I do? And because by naturality of theta V, you can go through. Well, which way do I want to go through? I want to go through with the bottom one. Okay, whatever. Okay. Then push you through to the top, then that will be your V. Okay. Okay. I guess if you push to the bottom, you might be able to use this definition. So maybe other ways. And then a couple other things when they start with traces. That tensor G, not right. I will have to write composition V first. If they're in the normal sense in general. Okay. And if you kind of now let these F and G be identities appropriately, then you get, you know, your definition for the one dimension. And this will give you some dimension, you know, relations, like the tensor product, dimension of tensor product is the same as the dimension of one times the one dimension of the other. And the last one will give you dimension, one dimension of V star is the same as dimension of V, one dimension. So it uses the fact that
Okay,
that's all.
So does the quantum dimension have to be a whole number, or can it be like any number in K?
No, in general, it's a whole number. So even let's take the case I is K, right? Like otherwise, they're not even numbers.
Yeah.
But so often, what happens? I think the quantum dimension sometimes turn out to be these quantum integers. Maybe I haven't talked about them. So N is an integer, let's say. I wonder how closely they're related to the SLMs, but I mean whether it's true in general. But you have a notion of turning integers maybe into recipe maybe for the, at least in some special cases.
It cannot be fraction.
It can be fraction. So in that case, at least for I know it's definitely true for this quantum, this invariant coming out of quantum groups based on the algebra SLM, what's true is this. So, for example, it needs Q to be N minus Q to the minus N. So this in general is a fraction, right? See? So this is in the special example, like coming from SLM. SLQM, I mean this UQSLM. You get these invariants, and the dimension you get out of them are given by these things. So in general, they're not integers.
But so those quantum integers, there's some sort of group structure which transforms, which maps them into normal integers. Is that why you call them quantum integers? Because you have some sort of
additive structure.
You have some sort of additive structure, which is not the normal additive structure, which makes them isomorphic to normal integers.
Well, Well, yeah, we're not
going to
use your
structure.
No,
yeah, so, but is that, because I mean, you call them quantum integers, so I'm wondering if there's this some, this other, like, quantum addition which makes them isomorphic to normal integers.
I don't know. So the fact that why they come out is, well, I'm not sure. So you might have a choice whether if they're designed to correspond to the quantum dimension of the trivial link. So I was going to say, no, that this is just the invariant of the trivial link obtained from the C and the V, right? So if you need to match that, I'm not sure whether there will be nice, such a nice structure. So like, because you want to match that, and so it's secondary whether it has this good structure or not. What's true, for example, I think, there's these factorials you can define nicely. The factorials are some multiplication of the same. So multiplication kind of has to be defined the same because of maybe like this thing, the dimension has to multiply. But I don't know whether the additive structure needs to be.
One comment. Maybe you should write on the trace explicitly in which space you are doing the trace, because the B is not so difficult. You need to do the trace on this prime on the right and on B on the left.
You mean trace here?
Yes. Look at the diagrams in the middle. So on the central desk and the backward.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. B. The B. On the right, the trace on this prime and the B.
Right. So I don't specify because you look the F. So in the category, when you pick a morphism, you can use the source and target to find out. So yeah, automatically you're doing, you know, the BV. So this is kind of the whatever source, I mean target source. You can figure it out from that. So given so the morphism comes with that information, supposedly.
Okay.
With the category structure, you can read it out. So that's why we don't write it. But yes. So you're right. So the book kind of makes this mistake that they did not in general allow
to because we are defining on the category and B and B prime the same. So.
Yeah. Well, in general, they don't have to be the same, right? Whenever they make sense, you can for different B prime. So it's true, you need to be careful going through this, but the notation should make sense. Incorporate that already.
Yeah, because I understand what I mean. On the left, we have B, right?
Right. On the left, you have like going from, say, B to B, and then right from B prime to B prime, right? So, but we don't, by this notation, we already know. But especially when we're studying, we need to be careful. Okay, so. For today. Okay.